This is one of those kind of near and dear topics to my heart, the idea of why would you need God? Because I did not grow up in a Christian family and grow up in a home that talked about God or was involved in regular church going. We went to churches around from time to time. One of my best buddies growing up was a preacher's kid over at the Presbyterian church across the block, and we got into lots of trouble together. He was about the most unchristian-like example in my life, but I didn't have any of this idea that I should live life with God in it. I just didn't grow up with that. And then I went and I worked at a zoo. Anybody here 16? Raise your hand if you're 16. Got any 16? Okay. When I was your age, I started working at a zoo and aquarium called Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium. And it was just the coolest part of my life. I got to work with sharks. I got to go into a bat cave. It makes you feel like Batman until you're not, because they're really messy. But I got to work with monkeys and tigers and all sorts of different things. And I was surrounded at that time with people who took an atheistic worldview, because most of the people who were working in zoos had the view that the science says that there is no God. And I'll let Eric talk about that in more depth. That's just wrong. Let me summarize. I haven't heard Eric speak yet, but he's going to say that's wrong. The science is the other way. But what was interesting was is at the same time that I'm working at a zoo, I'm over here with these people who say, no, the science says there is no God, and we just do what we want, and we live as we please. I'm also becoming more and more interested in a young lady who would eventually become my wife. And so she is a church-going person, and she is interested in the Bible, and our first real, tangible conversation I remember us having about spiritual things was her saying, well, you do know I'm going to heaven and you're not. And that led to a big conversation. And so I'm going to be around religious people on the weekends. And then during the week, I'm going to be with these people who are really, really irreligious. And I'm struggling with the science stuff, I'm struggling with my own personal junk and all sorts of things. But one of the things that I noticed was I'd go to work and I'd be with these people who said, I do whatever I want because there is no God and I'm just going to live my life. And you know what? I heard them all day complain. And they were grumpy and miserable, very, very unhappy. And then I would go and I would, on the weekends, I'm going to church. And so I'm sitting in pews just like this, you know, the kind of semi-comfortable, half-wooden, half-cushiony pews, and listening to sermons and having people talk about the Bible. And these people are saying the exact opposite. They're saying, I don't do whatever I want. There's a lot of things that I can't do. And in fact, I should feel guilty if I do those things. And I need to confess my sins. And there's all this conversation about rules and regulations. But you know what I'm finding with them? They are happy. There's a lot more happiness. There's a lot of talk about counting their blessings. And there's a lot of people who say, oh yeah, my life was like this, and now it's very hopeful. And so I'm seeing these two worlds kind of play out. And as I'm seeing that, I'm kind of having to process it, right? There's a lot of reasons to be a Christian. But one of those is just simply this. You were designed for the life where God says, here's the rules and regulations, here's what I want you to do, and then you'll flourish in that environment. You're not designed for a do-whatever-you-want environment. You're just not made for it. And it's an interesting thing, they've even done studies with kids, so they take like little kids and they put them in the playground and they take all the fences around the playground away. So you say, okay, the kids now, there's no fences, and there's nothing to protect them from the street cars out there and traffic and all those sorts of things. So they take all the fences down, and guess what the kids do when you take the fences down? These little kids, like 5-6-year-olds, they all play really close together in the center of the playground. They only get in that area right in the middle of the playground because they don't want to accidentally get near traffic. Now imagine we put those fences back up. Guess what happens to those same kids? You put fences around the playground, what happens? Anyone want to guess? You can talk, it's okay. Yeah, that's right. They shoot to every corner, right? Like now they're playing freeze tag and they're climbing on the fences, not over the fences. You know, that's not good. But they're doing everything they can imagine because they've got boundaries now. And that's exactly what you are. You are somebody. You are somebody's kid. And not just your parents' kid. You're your Father in Heaven's kid. And he gives you these boundaries because he knows you actually flourish a lot better with them than without them. So anybody here talk to themselves? Raise your hand if you talk to yourself. Yes, I talk to myself. Every once in a while I need to have a good conversation, so I talk to myself. We talk to ourselves for a lot of different reasons, but one of the primary times I find myself talking to myself is when I'm trying to figure something out. My wife will joke that I'm like muttering to myself because I'll have some sort of woodworking project or I'll be working on the plumbing or something and I'm underneath the sink working on the plumbing and I'm having this entire conversation with myself. But what I'm doing is I'm verbally kind of working through the problem. Anybody else do that where you have to kind of like talk yourself through a problem? Yeah. So I want you to turn with me to Psalm 139. Psalm 139, because that psalm is, in my view, I think that's what David's doing. David is kind of having this, he's writing this psalm down that's like a conversation that he's having with himself about what to do about God. What do I do about this God thing that I have to deal with in life? Am I going to act like he is or am I going to act like he isn't? And so what we're going to do is we're just going to go on this journey with David. So I want you to read with me, and we're just going to read through the psalm. We're going to take chunks at a time. And I want you to start seeing some things about David and what he came to some understanding of about his need for God. So now if you're a note taker, there are going to be some blanks in the notes section where you can fill some things in. And so we're going to start in the 139th psalm. We're going to just read the first six verses here, and we'll start there. Okay. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thought from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down and are intimately acquainted with all my ways. Even before there is a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all. You have enclosed me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is too high, I cannot attain it. So here's David. And the first thing he starts talking about is, okay, here's God, and how well does God understand me? And the answer to it is, how much? Before David's going to speak, God knows what he's going to say. He says, you've searched me and known me when David's sitting down. So right now, if an angel went and asked God what you were doing right now, could God say whether you were sitting or standing? Now, he'd know that. Well, that alone is impressive because think of people that you love. Do you know whether they're sitting or standing right now? I don't know what my brother lives in Montana. I don't know whether he's sitting or standing. He's probably sitting, kind of lazy. But I don't know it. I don't know to be sure, right? But I love him. I tease my brother a lot too, but I do love him. But I don't know all those sorts of things. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. You know all the different things I do. And then it says, you hem me in behind before and lay your hand upon me. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Raise your hand if you, and I'll give you a heads up, I'm going to argue with you no matter what your answer is. So there's no such thing as a right answer or a wrong answer. Just one I can argue with. Raise your hand if you think David was a good man. Okay? Raise your hand if you think David was a bad man. Yeah. Okay, most of you said you thought he was a good man. Some of you said both. I think that's the only people who are right, the ones who said both. Because when you talk about David, I generally think of him as a good man too. But what were some of the things that David did in his life that were bad? Killed a man, killed Uriah, took the guy's wife, lied about the whole thing. I mean, if we took David to court, we would call him a murderer and a liar and a traitor, right? Because when he had Uriah killed, he had him killed in battle. So he did something that was worse for the country so that he could get away with his lie. That's treason. So if I told you, hey, I got this buddy, he's a murderer, he's a liar, and he's a traitor, you want to be his buddy too? Do you see the problem with it? But we also say David is a good man because, after all, God does say, if you look over in 1 Samuel 13, God says, I'm going to go find a king after my own heart. So here's David. He's a good man, but he's also a bad man. How about David? Was David a king? Yeah, he's a king. Okay, so at one point he was a rich man. Was David ever also a poor man? Yeah, there were a couple of times in his life. One, he was a shepherd, which is probably not the wealthiest profession. But especially when he was running from Saul, he was completely dependent on the kindness of other people. So David had times in his life where he was really rich and times when his life was really poor. When you are really rich, it's really hard to get people who will genuinely understand you and be your friend. Why might it be that a rich person has a hard time making friends? If all of a sudden I gave you $1 billion, I could give you $1 billion, right? And then tomorrow people want to be your friend. What do you think? Yeah. How do I know they want to actually be my friend, right? They might just want my money. I just read an article just the other day about people who win the lottery, and it's unbelievable what it does to them. And one of the biggest areas it affects is their friendships. Just all of a sudden, they've got second cousins coming out of nowhere, right? Because people are like, oh no, we're family. How about when you're poor? When you're poor, does that affect your relationships with people? Yeah. I remember when Jenna and I were first married, we were so poor. I mean, so poor. I remember at times, there was one dinner where we figured out we had enough to buy a head of lettuce and split it down the middle. And we put some expired ranch dressing on it, and that was dinner. And my wife was such a loving woman, she kind of gave me an extra and the half. It wasn't exactly. Like, we were so poor. And then after services, people would be going out to lunch somewhere. And they go, oh, you guys want to go out to lunch with us? And we had to say no. Because we couldn't afford it. And that was isolating. So when you're rich or when you're poor, you have a hard time with people really knowing who you are because the money gets in the way. The power or the lack of power gets in the way. David was that kind of a guy. He was both ends of that spectrum. So you think he ever had a hard time wondering whether or not people actually understood him? David, as he talks, is a man who's lived a very full life with a lot of ups and a lot of downs in it. He was a very kind man, but he was also somebody who God said had shed a lot of blood. He was a warrior. He'd seen people die, and he'd been the one who swung the sword. I mean, you think about David. What's the most famous guy David ever killed? Who is it? Goliath, right? Goliath. So he kills Goliath with a sling and a stone, right? But then it says he took the guy's sword, and he cut his head off. Can any of you imagine cutting a human being's head off? And I'm not talking like video game imagine. I mean like actually going through the tendons. cutting through the trachea. This is heavy stuff, right? Oh, that was a bad joke. I didn't even mean to make that joke. That's how long I've been a dad, that I tell those kind of jokes and I don't mean to. David knew what it was like to take another human being's life. He knew what it was like to have blood on his hands. He knew what it was like to sin. He knew all of these things. And can you see how maybe if you're David, you get to a point where you think, nobody understands me anymore? I'm really just all alone in this. But that's the first part of that psalm. Who understands David when nobody else does? It's God, right? God understands it. If people saw you at your worst, what would they say about you? You ever had like a bad moment where you lost your temper? Or you did something really dumb? Or you were not brave like you should have been? Right? If people see you at your worst, they walk away and say, oh, I know that person there, and fill in the blank. Or people see you at your best, where everything's just exactly the way it should be, you know, like your Instagram self. And they think, oh, I know them. And you think, no, you don't know me. Right? Have you ever had somebody give you a compliment and you thought, I didn't really earn that compliment? If they really knew, they wouldn't have said that to me. Right? David says, God knows me for my good and my bad, and he still loves me, and I can't get away from it. It's important to have somebody in your life who understands you. And David said, I know that God does that. Okay, now, let's move down. Move down and start verse 7 with me. Where can I go from your spirit? Psalm 139, verse 7. Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, the night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. What he's describing here is, okay, let me think for a second, where can I go to get away from God? Right? That's what David's saying. He's saying, okay, if I wanted to run away from God and just not deal with him at all anymore, where can I go that God wasn't? What's his answer? There's nowhere, right? I'm going to go to the deepest part of the ocean. I go all the way to the bottom. I get away from every human being and all other life on this planet. But who's still there? Who's still there? God. Yeah, God's still there, right? How about, you know, we have people who go up to International Space Station. They go all the way up in the sky, go way out there. We've got people talking about going to Mars. Okay, let's go to Mars. You can get away from all other human beings. But guess who's still there? God. Right? Let's just say you just had it with your family. I'm done with them. I'm out of here. I'm done with the church. I'm gone. Tired of all these people. I'm going to go live life the way I want. You can get away from me. You can get away from mom and dad. You can get away from Mark and David, right? But who can't you get away from? Still got God, don't you? So one of the things that David points out is, one, I can't get away from God. And he says, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. He points out that two things. One, I can't get away from God, and God doesn't want me to get away from him. That's called pursuit. God is pursuing him. David says, I am being pursued by God. And what's interesting is David is a guy who knows all about pursuing people because he's a soldier. And who did David pursue? Who was the primary enemy for David during most of his life? What nation was the biggest, baddest one that he was fighting most of the time? Anybody remember? Philistines, yeah. This Goliath people, right? And David would chase them through hill and valley and forest and wilderness. And he would hunt them down. When Saul was king, he would tell David, hey, I need you to go kill 1,000 Philistines. He'd go, be back in a month. Off he'd go, find himself 1,000 Philistines, come on back and say, what do you got next? He knew exactly how to pursue people that he wanted to get. He was a hunter of men. And then, when Saul didn't like David anymore, what happened then? Yeah, it flipped, didn't it? Yeah, Saul starts pursuing David. So now David knows what it's like to be pursued. Remember when David would have to hide in a cave and Saul's like just outside. Army's just outside there. In fact, there's a time Saul goes inside the cave and David and all his men are hiding in that cave. He knows exactly what it's like to be pursued. So David knows both sides of this coin. He knows how to hunt, and he knows what it's like to be hunted. And here is God, and he says, you know what, God, you've been hunting me. You've been pursuing me. Now, we pursue people for two reasons. And the one that David dealt with was is more of the negative sort of pursuit. But if you ever come out of a grocery store, and then one of the grocery clerks kind of chases you down, like, oh, excuse me, or chases your parents, excuse me, or you see them do it to somebody else. They're doing it for one of two reasons. What are the two reasons that grocery clerks will chase people down in the parking lot? What's one reason?
Card got declined, or you forgot something.
Okay, you either forgot something, or you forgot to pay for something. That's right, yeah, something happened. Either they need something from you, or they have something to give you. Now here's the trick question. Why is God pursuing David? Is it because he wants something from David, or he wants to give something to David? Which one is it? Anyone want to take a guess? Yeah, Eric's back there. He says yes. Yeah, that's it. Yes. Does God want something from you? Yeah, he does. He wants your love. He wants your trust, your faith. He wants a relationship with you. He wants something from you. Does God want to give you something? Yeah. He's the Father of lights from whom every blessing flows. He wants to give you the life he's designed for you. He wants happiness for you. He wants joy for you. So it's both of those things. So God is pursuing me. Right? God is pursuing me, and we can see that in a lot of different verses. You can, even look over at like Luke 19. Jesus said the reason he came down on the earth, Luke chapter 19, verse 10. Anybody feel like reading? I don't know. Everybody read Luke 19, verse 10 for me? This is why Jesus says he came to earth. Okay, so you notice that language there? He's come to seek and save that which is lost. That's pursuit, isn't it? He wants us. Right, so Jesus comes down. The whole reason he comes to earth is not because earth is better than heaven. He was up where it was great, and he comes down here. Why? Because he wants you. He's pursuing you. But then the flip side to that is that God wants you to pursue him. Look over in James chapter 4, verse 8. Somebody want to grab James 4, verse 8 for me. James 4, 8. Yeah. Okay, so here, you draw near to God, what's he do? He's going to draw near to you. So he wants you to cleanse your hands, right? Straighten up your life, repent of your sins, those rules and regulations again. Here's the boundaries, but I want to have a relationship with you. David understood that. That was the character of God. And so you ask yourself two questions. You say, well, here, if God is pursuing me, am I accepting his pursuit? And two, am I pursuing him back? So something I want you to kind of self-examine. This is one of those skills of being a Christian, is to self-examine, to look at yourself and ask questions. Like, what kind of life am I living? What kind of person am I? One question I want you to ask yourself is, am I really pursuing God? Not, are other people pursuing God for me? Because you're right at that age, right? This is a 10 and up youth forum. You're at the age where, up until this point, other people have been putting you in contact with a relationship with God. Mom and dad are bringing you to services. Mom and dad are reading the Bible. Other people are preaching the sermons. You have to sit through them. Right? We're gonna make you come in contact with the Word of God. But then something starts to change as you move more into the teen years. You've got to start saying, am I doing this for me? Am I all of a sudden, now, am I engaging? As I listen to the sermons, am I asking myself questions? Am I trying to apply these things? Am I reading my Bible on my own? And when I run into a passage in the Bible I don't understand, am I going and finding people to help me understand it? Ask yourself that question. Am I pursuing God? Okay, let's keep going. We go on down to verse 13. So Psalm 139 down verse 13. For you formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance, and your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. He was talking about his body. And David just said, look, when I look at me, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And he says, God has intricately woven me in the depths of the earth. Now, I am not a doctor. But last time I checked, children did not come from the depths of the earth. Why would he say, I was woven in the depths of the earth? Anyone want to take a guess at why? This is a trickier question. The very first human being, what's his name?
Adam.
What was Adam made out of?
Dirt.
He made out of dirt. So where did every human being come from?
Dirt.
Now, we've got some pretty incredible medical technology today. Some really amazing scientists out there who know some really wonderful things. How many of them can make a human being from dirt? It's wild, right? Can you imagine just picking up some of the garden soil out in your yard and going, I think I'm going to make Joey. Like, that's what God can do. That's impressive. And he says you're fearfully and wonderfully made. And so when you're intricate, like the things that are going on in as a human being, your nervous system, you ever think about the fact you stub your toe? So you walk by one of these pews and you stub your toe. How long until you realize you stubbed your toe? 5 minutes later you figure it out? It's immediate, right? There's a nervous system that goes straight from your pinky toe up to your brain and tells you exactly what happened. That's wild. And your eyeball, the fact that I'm over here looking at you and my eyes will focus close and then far away and then close. I mean, it makes all of the range adjustments all on the fly. And God made you that way. He made you to be able to do those things. You ever catch a baseball? I'm constantly impressed by what it takes to catch a baseball. Because somebody throws you a baseball, one, you have to see the baseball, and it's coming closer, so you got to see it at different depths, right? So your eye has to adjust. And then, on top of that, you've got to adjust to how fast it's going. So your brain has to process how quickly it's going. And when you catch it, when you reach your hand up to catch a baseball, somebody throws it from the back of the auditorium back there, when are you going to reach your hand up to catch it? When it's this close? Is that when you put your hand up? Hand goes up further back, right? By the time the baseball gets to about Chad, I'm getting ready to catch it. Because my brain has to calculate the trajectory on the thing. And then it has to tell my hand where to go. How's it do that? How's your brain know how to calculate where a baseball is, how fast it's going, where it's going to land, and tell your hand how to catch it? Wild, right? Fearfully and wonderfully made. You're intricately made. That means you're very complex. Now, when something is complex, that tells you something about it. First of all, it tells you it has a designer. Right? Complex things require designers. But when you make something complex, everybody built a really intricate Lego set. Not like one of those $10 sets, but like the biggest. Build a big one. The Death Star or whatever, right? That's intricate. And when somebody builds that, you know when you look at something as big as that, you realize, oh, they put a lot of time and effort into that. You don't just wake up one morning and just do that. Like, that's a big project. God made you intricate, and complex, and fearful, and wonderful. So what does that tell you about his interest in you? You were designed by God. And you mattered to him. And on top of it, he knows how you work. This is another reason that you need God, is because he made you and he made the blueprints for you. So, you ever been sad and you don't know why? And raise your hand if you've ever been sad and you just didn't quite know why. Raise your hand if you've ever been happy and you didn't quite know why. Yeah. So you mean to tell me you have emotions you can't understand? That's what you just told me. You said, I don't even know what I'm thinking some of the time. That's what you just said, right? Sometimes I have emotions that don't make any sense to me. Guess who they do make sense to? Makes sense to God. Those times when you're sad and you don't know why, guess what? If you ask God, if an angel went up to God and said, hey, do you know why they're sad right now? What do you think he'd say? I know why. Because he designed you. So he knows what's best for you. So remember those rules and regulations that we talked about in the beginning, the boundaries around the schoolyard? That's why he puts them there. Because he knows what's best for you. It's not that he doesn't want you to have fun. It's that he does want you to have fun. He puts those boundaries up because he knows exactly what you need. And when he says you're fearfully and wonderfully, fearful is the fragile part. How am I doing time-wise? Where am I at? I got a couple minutes. Okay, I got enough time for a story. You okay with me adding a story in? I wasn't expecting to. Is that okay? Okay. My wife and I went to school with a guy. And my wife and I are high school sweethearts. So we met in high school and then we got married. And we had seven kids. And we're those people. We still just love doing things together. And we're just gross our kids out. But at the same time that we were high school sweethearts, there was another couple that we went to school with that they also were high school sweethearts. And so they just met right about the same time as us. And they were going to school about the same time as us. And when we graduated high school, we ended up going one way and they went another way. And we heard about them one day. We said, hey, how's Sean doing? And turns out that couple, really sad story. They were going to wait to get married until after they both graduated from college. Makes sense. They wanted to both get their degree and then they were going to get married. He was sitting in the stands. She was walking out, graduating from college. So she's cap, gown, all that thing. She's walking. And as she was walking and her whole class getting their diplomas, you ever seen one of those? They're handing out the diplomas and all that. He's in the stands and has a brain aneurysm and dies. Just like that. Totally healthy guy. Sean. Not a single health problem in his whole life. Brain aneurysm. Gone. Just like that. Fearfully and wonderfully made. You don't know how much time you have. Like, we assume we have time, right? We assume that we'll live for years and years and years, and I'll do this or I'll do this other thing, but there's no guarantee with stuff like that. And so one of the reasons that I think it's so cool that you're investing time and studying your Bible like what you all are doing right now is because you're smart. You're realizing that you don't know how much time you got here on earth, and you just got to take advantage of it while you got it and do what you can with what time he provides you with, because your life is a fragile thing. And again, that's why God puts a lot of those rules and regulations around the boundaries, is because he understands you're fragile. On the other hand, human beings are able to do crazy things like build giant skyscrapers and go to the moon and all sorts of stuff like that, but we're also very, very fragile. And God understands those things. And you are designed by him, and he wants you to understand those things too, so that you live a life accordingly. A lot of times people do things assuming they'll have more time, and they don't. I have a lot of people that, about the same time I was becoming a Christian, they were off and beginning a life without God. And some of them had been raised in Christian families, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, I was becoming a Christian, they're kind of just moving away from God. And they all assumed they'd have time to come back, and there's not a guarantee of that. So David understood, I'm made by God, and God knows what's best for me because he designed me. Okay, move on down. Verse 17, 139, Psalm verse 17. How precious also are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I awake and I am still with you. Now, here in this particular psalm, he talks about, boy, God and his thoughts. He has so many thoughts. Now I want you to turn over to Psalm 40. Turn in your Bible to Psalm 40. So David here, he's talking about how God thinks so many things. He has great big thoughts, and there's so many. It's too wonderful for David. I can't count them. They're more than the sand of the sea. But now I want you to turn to Psalm 40, verse 5, and that's another psalm of David. And in here he says, many, O Lord my God, are the wonders which you have done and your thoughts toward us. When David is saying in the 139th psalm how God has all these grand thoughts and they're more than the sand of the sea, the thoughts he's talking about are the same thoughts he's talking about in Psalm 40, which is God's thoughts about people. Raise your hand if you've ever gotten a very thoughtful gift. Like just a gift that just like, wow, that was so thoughtful. And it wasn't even, if you got a gift like that, right, it probably wasn't even the dollar amount on the gift that mattered. It was that the person really thought about you, right? And they thought about what you would want. And they were really careful with it. And it was important to them to give you the right thing, right? You could tell by the nature of the gift that they'd really been thinking about you. Anybody here like to give thoughtful gifts? Like, yeah, okay. So some people are more gift givers than others. I am not a particularly great gift giver. I'm a great gift taker. But I'm not always so great at it. But I've got several family members who are really big gift givers. And they will really think and think and think before they give somebody a gift. And it shows, right? When you get a thoughtful gift, it really shows. That's what David is saying about his life. When I look at my life, I can really tell that God thinks about me. I can tell that God is thinking about me all the time. And that I am important to him. In your life, one of the things that time gives you the benefit of is seeing how this thing and this thing and this thing and this thing happened. And none of them made a lot of sense at the time. But down the road, wow, if that and that and that and that hadn't happened, I wouldn't be me. Right? My wife talks about how she lived right on the county line, and so there were two different schools she could have gone to. And the one she wanted to go to, she didn't go to. She instead had to go to the boring, lesser school. And that was the one I attended at. And if she'd gone to the school she wanted to go to, we would have never met. It's a little fork in the road, right? Like a little detail. And it, at the time, it felt like a disappointment. Like, oh, this is not what I wanted. Right? But in the end, you look back and you say, oh, look at how those things worked together. What I want you to see is that not only are you designed by God, but you're appreciated by God. God really does think about you. He wants what's best for you. He's got desires for you. He's got plans for you. One of the images the Bible uses to describe our relationship with God is a potter with clay. So a potter, he takes a lump of clay, and then what's he do with that clay? It's just a pile of mud, right? What's he do with it? It's in the name. Potter, what does he do? He makes a pot out of it, right? He makes something good out of it. He'll take that mud, and he'll shape it, mold it. And if you were the mud, you might feel uncomfortable during that shaping process. I've got a friend who is a potter, and he's got really strong hands. Like, he's one of those guys, you shake his hands and you're okay, Oliver. Because he just works clay all the time, and his fingers are really strong. So if you were the clay, you kind of at times feel like, oh, I don't think I like this. But then you get turned into something really beautiful or really useful, or maybe some of both. That's what God does. You are his child, and he is the potter, and you are the clay. And I want you to know how much he appreciates you and how important you are to him. Because there's going to be times in your life where you're going to feel very alone. And I want you to understand that God's not going to leave you alone. He may be working you through something that feels like a disappointment or a hardship, but it'll get to the other side, and it'll make sense. Okay, we're going to finish up. I'm about out of time here. Go down and look in verse 19 of 139th Psalm. Oh, that you would slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, men of bloodshed, for they speak against you wickedly, and your enemies take your name in vain. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord, and do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with the utmost hatred. They have become my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there be any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way. Anybody else feel like that psalm just took a weird turn? All of a sudden he's talking about hatred and hating and enemies and all that. Like, we started this psalm out with, oh God, you search me and you know me and I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. And we end the psalm with, I hate these people just like they hate you. You see how it changed? Very different. But what you're seeing here in Psalm 139 is David being David. David is a human being. And David had people who were not always nice to him. He had people who were mean to him, like King Saul. Remember how we talked about Saul chasing him all over the place? Did David deserve that? Wasn't fair. Nothing about it fair. Anybody, raise your hand if you've ever heard the phrase, life is not fair. Yeah. My parents used to add the word sweetheart at the end, which added like a twist to the knife. Life is not fair, sweetheart. And it was not a nice thing. Like, if you just learn, life isn't fair. Psalm 139 is David dealing with an unfair life. So his life isn't fair, and there's people who are mean to him, and things aren't going the way it should be. So what does he do? Who does he talk to about it? He talks to God about it. And he ends the thing by saying, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. It's like he's saying, God, I'm so angry about all this stuff, and these people are bad people, and I just want to deal with them. But God, you know my heart. You know who I want to be. Have you ever had a really big emotion that you knew if you just said whatever you were feeling in the moment, it'd probably come out wrong? Yeah, absolutely, right? That's David. That's David bringing to God his worst emotions, his hardest emotions, and saying, God, I know you listen to me. And then at the end saying, God, I know you lead me. You know why you need God? Because sometimes you're going to have really painful, hard, unfair things, sweetheart, that are going to happen to you. And then you're going to have to figure out how to deal with them. And if you have to deal with it by yourself, you're going to make a lot of bad choices. But if you can bring it to God, and you can just say, God, I have enemies, and I have frustrations, and I am tired, and this is way harder than I thought it would be. And God, try me and search me and know my heart. You know me. You know who I am, right? Because remember how he started the psalm? God knows everything. He knows my words before I say them. God, you know the kind of person I want to be, but right now I don't want to be that guy. Could you just take care of this for me? That's another reason you need God. It's because there's going to be stuff in your life that you want to take care of, but you know would not turn out well if you took care of it. So you got to give it to God and let him take care of it. You guys are great. Thank you for letting me come and speak with you and be with you a little bit. I am excited to hear what Eric and Ryan have to say. But I will finish with simply saying this. Remember how I told you I had two groups of people I was hanging out with? People at the zoo every day said, we do whatever we want. People at church said, we don't do whatever we want. Well, you know the rest of the story, right? I'm not at the zoo anymore. I am here. And I think I made the right choice. Because the people who listen to God end up happier. And that's exactly what he wants for you. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you very much, Scott.
We're going to take about a 10-minute break. Bathrooms, for those of you who are not from here, if you go out into the foyer, hang either a right, and the men and women's bathrooms are on the left and the right, or you can go to the left and go down the steps, and there are some bathrooms down there. There's a water fountain down the steps, and then the hall over to the side too. 10-minute break, let's go.